All right, so now let's talk about deflagration to detonation transitions. We all heard today and yesterday how important to understand how detonations can appear. This work, I will be showing multiple results obtained during the past several years for terrestrial systems and some results obtained for supernovas. Many of these results are done in collaborations with other people. And I want to note Alexey Hachlov, Craig Wheeler, and Takanobu Ogawa. So, as I said, motivation for this work, we really want to understand how it happens. It's still an unsolved problem, but there was a considerable progress in terrestrial combustion in our understanding how DDT happens. We can model it in certain situations. We can do experiments and see how things really happen in reality. Compare experiments with simulations and make some conclusions. As we know, combustion, thermonuclear combustion in supernovas is very similar to terrestrial combustion in chemical systems. And if we know how to study terrestrial combustion, can we apply the same methods for supernovas? Well, we cannot really do experiments, but we can try to do numerical experiments in the same setups and see, at least get some feelings how the system can behave. So how do we initiate usually detonation in terrestrial systems? We can just drive a strong shock from somewhere. That's how detonation initiated in any military things that explode. You have a detonator that sends a strong shock and everything explodes. But this is not how it happens if we have accidental explosions that starts from the flame. It appears that we need a gradient of reactivity that will allow shocks to develop gradually from a spontaneous ignition wave. What is spontaneous ignition wave? Imagine you have a hot reacting material that can explode. What does it mean? It releases energy at some point. So if this material is heated to some temperature, it can sit for a while, and then energy will be released, explosion happens. If the material is at uniform temperature, everything explodes at the same time, and you have constant volume explosion that doesn't produce very strong shocks. These shocks don't give detonations. It's true for terrestrial systems. It's true for supernovas. Now, imagine you have a gradient of temperature. Then material will explode at higher temperature sooner than at lower temperature, but this explosion will happen. They may happen independently, and you will have a wave, spontaneous wave of ignition that will propagate at some velocity defined by the gradient. And Zeldovich's idea was that if we have this velocity comparable to the sound speed, we can generate shocks. Simulations show it's a little bit more complicated. We need a supersonic speed. And if the speed decreases at some point, we have strong shocks that can initiate detonations. But this works. We can model it. It's easy. I will show you a few movies. This is a two-dimensional gradient. It's elliptical gradient, temperature maximum is in this corner, and then it can decrease at different rates in different directions. So if we wait for a while, we can see ignition in a corner, and then this is a shock generated by the flame, and the flame itself grows. But the shock goes forward and eventually they separate and nothing else happens. We have a flame. Why we didn't have a detonation? The gradient wasn't right. If we change the gradient, and we make it more shallow, and we do the same thing, we wait, we see the shock that is stronger, and it actually, it's a detonation already. It ignites reaction immediately behind the shock, and detonations are unstable, so we have the cells that develop quickly. All right, so we know how detonation may appear from the gradient. But DDT is really more a complicated process. First, we need to create this gradient. So how do we create this gradient? And once we created it, if detonation appears from the hot spot, can it survive? For example, detonation can appear in some small pockets isolated from unburnt material by a thick burnt layer, and it may die there. All these issues arise in terrestrial combustion, and they are true for supernovas. But for now, we are interested really in the question, how do we create these hot spots? You know, once we created it, then it can appear. But how to create? There is two basic mechanisms considered in series. One is based on mixing between burned products and unburned cold material. For this, we need to extinguish the flame, because the flame is a wave. It always separates burning material and unburned material, and there is no way to mix them unless you extinguish this flame. Another mechanism involves shock compression. You don't need any mixing, you just create shocks that compress material, increase temperature, and you have these hot spots created by adiabatically by shock compression. Well, in supernovas, we often consider this mixing as a possible mechanism for DDT. Theory says we need distributed flame for this, so it should be highly turbulent flow, so the turbulence can penetrate into the flame thickness and disturb it and create this thick layer of mixed hot and cold materials and some gradients there, and hopefully this gradient can ignite detonations. One of the problems is region should be pretty large. For terrestrial systems, it's 100 to 1,000 times larger than detonation thickness or the flame thickness that are comparable. For thermonuclear flames, it's even larger. It's 10 to the 4, 10 to the 5 times. Even if we want to do the smallest possible scales, difference of scales, we need to do this in 3D on uniform mesh because we need a turbulence, and this should be at least 10 to the 9 cells, which is we're approaching the feasibility of this, but it's not done yet. There's no simulations that show DDT on these mechanisms. I can show you some preliminary simulations that may give a feeling what should happen. It's a flame in a shear layer in 3D that is disturbed by turbulence. It's not a quite distributed regime. There's still this large flame lets, but there's pieces of flame that are torn away by turbulence, and there is sort of mixing here. And if we continue, this mixed region, they reignite, so everything burns. They burn away, but they don't burn violently enough to create shocks. And actually, this domain is too small. It cannot really create any strong shocks. But that's basically what should happen in a distributed flame regime on larger scales. Now, what happens with experiments? We have experiments in terrestrial systems. Can we look at it? It happens that all the experiments that may demonstrate some mixing mechanisms responsible for DDT involve strong shocks. For example, this is the end of the tube that enters a larger volume filled with combustible mixture. There is a shock in this tube that interacts with the flame, and this is a shock exits from the tube, and there is a flame behind this shock. So it's not a detonation, it's just a shock too weak to ignite detonation. When it exits the tube, it diffracts, expands. So temperature drops behind the shock. And if there was no detonation before inside the tube, there shouldn't be normally after it exits, because everything cools down, unless we have a flame. So flame behind the shock can do something to produce detonations, and we see it's really something, doing something, because this is already detonation. It appears somewhere here, and closer looks show it's somewhere on the edge between the flame and the shocked material. Is it a mixing? Maybe. But this is what experiments can show. It's not exactly all the details. It's just some evidence that this may happen. But there's no conclusive experiments that could tell us this is mixing. And practically all terrestrial experiments are done in confined system. You have tube, or you have some chamber, you have walls, you have obstacles, you have boundary layers. There is practically nothing about no experiments in unconfined systems that could show detonation happens there. All right, but we have experiments in confined systems, and we can model them. For example, shock-flame interactions provide, in shock tubes, provide controlled environment where DDT can be studied on scales that we can observe. And this is a simulation that shows how shocks interact with the flame and eventually produce detonations somewhere here. Analysis shows these detonations are a result of shock compression. Shocks interacting with the flame accelerate because of energy release in the flame and eventually become strong enough to produce hot spots. So these hot spots appear in compressed material. It may be ahead of the shock. It can be in the funnels that form inside the flame, funnels of unreacted material. But these funnels are still unreacted. It's not a mixing mechanism. These are shocks. So now, can we study shock-flame interactions in supernovas? Can we imagine this is a mechanism for shock deflagration to detonation transitions in supernova? Maybe. We know that turbulent flames accelerate in supernova. We know that turbulent flames produce shocks in terrestrial systems. Let's imagine this can happen. If we look at shock-flame interactions in supernova, can this gives us some ideas about how detonation can happen? If it can, then we can think further how to produce these shocks. to do shock flame interactions in supernovas, we need a flame first. So this is a structure of a laminar flame and in thermonuclear laminar flame at density 3 × 10⁷. This part, if you look just on the carbon scale, doesn't look too different from terrestrial flames. This preheat zone that may be a little larger here because of high thermal conductivity and low diffusion. And then there is a reaction of the carbon, energy release. But there is other scales in this flame. And what we are interested in right now is the oxygen scale. The energy, about half of the energy is released on a scale that few orders of magnitude longer than a carbon scale. And this is the oxygen burning. And the material that burns there, oxygen, is hot. It's three times something on 10⁷. And it appears that if you drive shocks through this hot material, they pick up energy. They pick up energy, and at some density, they can become detonations that are different from detonations we are looking at. It's not a carbon-oxygen detonation in cold material. It's an oxygen detonation in a hot material that propagates at some velocity, produces some shock. Depending on the density, the shock will be stronger or weaker. But we find that at densities below 8 × 10⁷, these shocks are strong enough to produce detonations in carbon. I will show you how it happens. This is a zone of burned carbon, but unburned oxygen, sort of flame, and shock enters this material. And if you look at the shock, you can see it becomes stronger. This is the oxygen concentration behind, and it drops. This is practically a detonation already. And when the detonation exits back to the cold material, it ignites a carbon. And we have carbon detonation in this case. Well, it doesn't mean this is a mechanism of DDT in supernova. We solve it, everything. Well, the initial shock is pretty strong. This layer of oxygen in these particular simulations is about 40 times the thickness of the oxygen layer in laminar flame. How do you create that thick layer? Well, we don't have to. We may consider a flame, a turbulent flame brush with multiple wrinkles. And if each of these wrinkles somewhere on the oxygen scale, propagating shocks through these wrinkles may pick up energy just the way it can pick up in 1D case. And eventually we get a detonations here. And we actually shock can be weaker. There are transverse waves here on the reflections that help to ignite detonations. So this is a mechanism that I cannot tell. It's a mechanism to produce detonations directly, or it's definitely a mechanism to pick up energy for shocks in this thermonuclear systems. So this is a conclusion. We have a new mechanism. New, it means we didn't see this in terrestrial systems, but it's definitely a mechanism for shock acceleration in supernovas. It's not only a mechanism of shock acceleration. We can produce carbon oxygen detonations and these detonations are able to ignite carbon at some densities. That's it for my talk.
Okay, thank you for keeping on time, among other things. Craig, go ahead.
Can you think of a way of doing an experiment that would have two different fuels with different ignition links that you could try to simulate this? It's this two-component thing that you're drawing on. Can you think of a way of simulating that in a terrestrial experiment?
Well, I don't know any systems that will resemble these scales. There are some multi-stage reactions in terrestrial systems, but usually they involve first endothermic stage where molecules break and then some energy release. Right, we need two exothermic stage, and this is something difficult to find, but we can try.
Buddy, may I find your suggestion very interesting. So what you require, though, is that you have wavelets in your system that are close or even above sound speed, right? You have to have shocks.
Right.
But this means that you have to have local motions that are at least close to sound speed. So the mean flows, as we showed in these flame brushes, are far from that. And so you need really high turbulent intensity that in the PDFs you occasionally have, volumes or wavelets that go to such high speeds that you can have your mechanism working, right? So it has a low probability, but maybe not totally ruled out, but one has to consider, I think, really for this kind of turbulent flows we discuss the PDFs and see whether one finds. That's about this what Fritz said. That one has to analyze these kinds of simulations, large-scale simulations, to see what's the probability of finding this kind of shocks you need for your mechanism to work. So I think the moment you have it, I'm pretty convinced it goes away. You suggested that the question is going to be, do we find in the systems volumes that are big enough to have these kind of shocks?
How to create these shocks, it's a really separate question. Here we just show if we have a shocks, we have a mechanism to accelerate them. Well, where to get the shocks? One thing that we should understand, that turbulent flame speed in a white dwarf, that, as Wolfgang said, 5% of sound speed, it's not really the speed of flows that can produce shocks. We have, for example, these rising bubbles, and we have cold flow that sinks in between bubbles, and a shear flow in between these hot and cold materials, we can approach sound speeds. So once we have transonic flows, we can expect shocks. How strong the shocks will be, well, we need to study it.
And it looks like they can accelerate as they go through oxygen.
Well, once we have them, yes.
Yeah. Stan, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, thanks. Very, very stimulating talk. I think if you detonated at densities that high, you might have little trouble. You know, you might make too much iron or something. But the thing about, I should comment, we're pursuing very similar studies with the people at Lawrence Berkeley, and we are doing Resolve 3D turbulent flame interactions, but so far they're just on scales of sub-meter. We've tried using a technique from Alan Kirstein called ODT, one-dimensional turbulence, where you simulate the effect of three-dimensional turbulence but on a 1D grid, so you can have 100,000 or even 1,000,000 zones. And one thing we see is that the burning is very unsteady, that there can be micro-explosions, and Martin Lisevsky saw this earlier in a study of his own. I think it's seen in the chemical combustion community as well. And I think it's this unsteady nature of the burning that might belie the transition to detonation. But I had a specific question. That density is much higher than what Jens and I got for the place where you could enter the distributed regime. And I don't see any way of getting the heat out of the ash and into the fuel until you enter the distributed regime. And so how could one set up the conditions, any kind of conditions, for a transition to detonation until you can extract heat from the ash?
Yes, this is the point, that you may not need it. Or you may not need to extract heat from the ash if you have a strong shock. For example, you say flames are unstable, they produce pulsations. Well, some of these pulsations can produce compression waves. Say this compression wave goes through a turbine flame brush, and it picks up energy, maybe through this mechanism, maybe through shock flame interactions, extracting energy from carbon burning. But if this shock can accelerate, it can compress the material, unburned material, it doesn't need really flame anymore, and increase the temperature to the point where material ignites. Now, this can work together with the mixing. It preheats the material somewhat, and then you have some mixing somewhere from turbulence, and you have combined mechanism. But if you consider two separate mechanisms, they are independent. Well, it's not a. You always have heat in the oxygen zone, which is much larger than carbon. Imagine laminar flame.
Right. The flame has finite thickness and it has structure. He's using one part of the structure of the flame, just past the where the carbons burn. Right, and it happens below a certain density. Yeah, is that right?
Yes, you see, your ignition always occurs on carbon scale, but you have other scales to pick up energy, and this helps.
Just had a short comment on what Wolfgang said. So on average, the turbine velocity fluctuations we see are very low compared to sound speed. But as I showed in this PDF, there may be some instances where they get a really high. And so in some cases, I'm not so pessimistic that we always have too low turbine velocities there in order to create shocks you might need there. So there may be some places where that actually happens. And so therefore, I mean, the DDT in this concept may be a rare event, but it may still happen in the supernova because you still have a large volume where you may find some instances of these high turbulent velocities.
Are there any other questions?
So you mentioned the Zeldovich mechanism with a gradient of temperature, and can you have the same mechanism with a gradient of chemical
yes,
composition?
Anything. You need a gradient of induction time.
There are other questions? Well, if not, I'd like to thank the speaker. Thank you.